This afternoon, we'll spend a little time. We'll get an update on the occupied situation in front of the courthouse. Mike has had the opportunity to be engaged in the topic for the since you got back.
Yes.
So we'll talk a little bit about some of the current status of what's going on there, some of the challenges, and how life treated him this morning when he was out walking the line.
There you go.
All right. And it was a straight line.
Straight line.
And you did it on one foot, too, and you had your finger on your nose and hopping in rhythm and
all that stuff.
Yeah, okay. We'll talk about it when we come back.
I'm Jim Mongi, principal of St. Mary's Catholic School and Preschool. Our preschool program is designed to teach and model basic educational and social skills that children will need for success in kindergarten. Students learn about numbers, shapes, and colors. They begin pre-reading and writing. They develop problem-solving and sharing skills. They learn that school is fun. St. Mary's Preschool provides the foundation for a lifetime of learning. Give us a call today at 822-3877, license number 125-401-910.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 313. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mike Downey, but before we do our quote this afternoon, I'm going to do the quote and then say who it's from.
Okay.
I'll give you a shot at it.
All right. See, oh, gosh.
Pull the hat out of the rabbit. Okay, quote, "Time is neutral and doesn't change things. With courage and initiative, leaders change things."
Well, you know, Brian, you didn't tell
me. This guy's alive.
Well, you didn't tell me we're going to have a test today.
No. Okay, he's alive, and he's over 70 years old, and he's American.
Gosh, I don't know. I give up.
And he's black.
I give up.
He has double J's as his initials.
Okay, Jesse Jackson?
Bingo! Wow. I knew you could do
that. That was a good one. That was, oof. All right.
So let's talk about what everybody's talking about, it seems, the Occupied. It is had a business contact yesterday from the Bay Area, came in and said, "What is this all about? How are you allowing it? This is ugly. It must be killing your tourists." I mean, all the stuff that we've heard locally in town from local folks, I'm sure that the hotels and the barkeeps are running into this all the time.
Right.
And they don't even have to walk through them. You got to walk through them.
So you're ready for it? You're ready for my take, huh?
Well, you got a chance to leave the area for a little bit.
Yes, I did.
So you came back with fresh eyes.
Okay.
What did they see?
Well, you know, pretty much, I think it's gotten a little bit worse, actually, than before. You know, like a Sunshine and Humboldt commentary was just on here at the break. There's some misunderstanding, I think, in the general public. And the misunderstanding is around the actions being taken by the county. In defense of the county, they did enact an emergency ordinance. And it was based upon the issues that had arisen from the Occupy group. And that ordinance only covers the grounds of the courthouse. The ordinance doesn't cover the sidewalk, doesn't cover the street. So I think that's where people have some confusion. They'll drive by the courthouse and say, "Well, nothing's changed." Well, in fact, it has. We're keeping them off the courthouse grounds as far as storing their stuff, having tents, sleeping, that type of thing. But they still are on the sidewalk. Well, the ordinance doesn't cover the sidewalk. The sidewalk clearly comes under the jurisdiction of either Caltrans or the city. Both organizations, entities are frustrated, just as we're frustrated with where to go with this. Again, there is a First Amendment issue that keeps raising its head in all this.
What is the definition, Mike, of loitering?
Well, you know, loitering, if you want a true definition, you know, it's really nondescript in my mind as far as what loitering really means. Loitering is just hanging out with no specific purpose. It could be.
I would suggest somebody sitting day after day in a Lazy Boy.
I understand that.
Would tend to qualify.
I understand
under that heading. Okay.
But with holding the signs and saying I'm there for a purpose.
Different ballgame. Different ballgame.
Yeah. Is it?
Sure. I would think. Camping is camping. Loitering is loitering.
Right.
Protesting. I don't think there's a free speech component to sitting your butt in a Lazy Boy on a sidewalk on public property.
The public
now,
property.
If you're moving,
right?
If you've got a placard, if you're doing something, that's different. Just having presence, that doesn't sound like free speech. That doesn't sound like speech. There's no communication going on. There's loitering occurring.
Yeah.
But is that too narrow a definition?
Well, there's also a prosecution component to all this, too. We can arrest all day long, but there's a prosecution component. And that's some of what has come out of this is we have county government that's stretched to the limits financially based upon what's happening at the state level. We have a district attorney's office that's stretched just like every other office. So there's a prioritization that goes along with prosecution.
Yeah, but when he tells folks that they will not be prosecuted, when there are issues being claimed about staff size reduction, and it's because grants run out, it's not general fund related directly, there's shenanigans, mm-hmm. I mean, to use an Irish word, shenanigans seem to be occurring. It's not, if you say, because you're Mike Downey, regular guy, my department has 25% less money.
Mm-hmm.
We go, okay, Mike had a dollar yesterday. Today he's got 75 cents.
Right.
We get that. If we have somebody saying, I had to lay off 25% of my staff, I'm short staff now, and it's because a grant that allowed you to bump up 25% has now expired.
Right.
That was a temporary. That was not a permanent. That was not baseline. That was extra goodies we got for a couple of years.
Right.
Okay, thanks. Well, at least I was right. KINS, News and Information Time is 3:19.
Hi, this is Eric from Northwood Chevrolet Hyundai. You know, I think a lot of people forget that we have a great selection of used cars available. We might not have the inventory that some of the larger dealerships do, but I know our quality used cars stack up against anybody else's in the county. Plus the fact, if we don't have something on our lot, come on in, see us, and we can probably find it for you. We have a quality selection of some very nice used cars, what most people were looking for. But again, if we don't have it on our lot, we can probably find it for you at Northwood Chevrolet Hyundai.
Hi, my name is Mark Diaz from Northwood Hyundai, and I invite you to come down. We're open from 8:30 in the morning till 6 o'clock at night for your shopping convenience. Closed Sundays to be with family. And as my dad used to say, don't bring much money. You won't need it. That's Northwood Hyundai, 7th and D, Eureka.
Good afternoon. KINS News and Information Time is 3:24. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Humboldt County Sheriff Mike Downey. Mike, before the break, we were talking a little bit about the difference. And I suppose there's the legal distinction, and then there's the real-life distinction. Loitering, free speech, all these types of things. And I know that they're constitutionally defined and there's case law and all that kind of stuff. But for regular guy, we don't see an awful lot of difference.
Right.
So when we beat up the police or the local electeds or we go to City Hall or we go to the courthouse or we go to Caltransit, we say, how are you allowing this to happen?
Well, you know, I have to say that when this urgency ordinance was put together, county council spent a lot of time investigating past case law, and much of it is drafted on case law that has already been held up in court, and that's why it's drafted the way it is, because they didn't want the legal challenges. Are we still getting legal challenges? Yes, we're getting claims against the county. We probably have, my undersheriff probably has 7 or 8 claims on his desk right now, the same type of thing over the Occupy issue. So now,
is that from those participating?
Yes.
Who are arguing that because the DA's office didn't charge,
well,
that it really wasn't an issue and it becomes a hassle?
That's part of it, because what happens if there is no prosecution, then it emboldens them to a point. So they're saying there's been false arrests. They're looking for property that we've confiscated as part of the criminal case.
Sure. Even if the DA's office didn't see anything wrong, why should you? You're just hassling.
That's their opinion.
Yeah.
That's the people that are coming in. That's their opinion that we have overstepped our bounds constitutionally to do what we've done as far as enforcing the ordinance.
I would presume that that's not a universally accepted position from everybody involved in that incident.
Right. Yeah. My direction to my people, and I've been out on the line a few times with them myself, is I don't care what another department or agency is doing. My stance is we're going to enforce the ordinance. We enforce the ordinance. Cases are submitted. It's up to the DA, who has a totally different agency, and he has to look in and charge the cases based upon the merit of the case. Now,
do you have to submit to the DA, or can you submit to Eureka?
No, we don't submit to Eureka. Now, in some cases, on some even the ordinance itself, even county council could probably take some of those cases forward. But right now, everything is funneled through the district attorney's office, whether it's by the city or the county, that type of thing. And you know, they are strapped just like everyone else. I can't speak to his agency specifically as to what's going on. They've had a number of homicide cases, that type of thing. But the point is that this issue is becoming a very glaring issue, more than it was in the past. I was out there just the other day, and we cleared the lawn again, and the area around the courthouse, as far as articles of clothing and trash and spoiling food being stored on the property, which is on county property, which is strictly forbidden by the ordinance. We actually went over to public health. There's an enclosed porch on the back of public health. They had sleeping bags draped over the railing, air mattress on top of the stoop. They had sleeping bags. Two people were there sleeping. In that close vicinity was defecation, urination, feminine hygiene articles on the ground. You look at that kind of thing and you think, you know, what have we become as a society? There's no civility to this anymore.
It's a de-evolution.
Yes, and I really think, based upon what I see, we're not seeing occupiers. That's not who's there. Occupy left a long time ago. There may be some spatterings here and there that still come in and go out, but they go home at night. But these are people that have been encouraged to come there, the homeless, the disenfranchised, those that have nowhere to go.
Encouraged by whom?
By the Occupy, I think by the Occupy group in the beginning, but then they became sick of it. We dealt with a guy yesterday who is on that lawn or in front of the courthouse every day, and he was sleeping on the lawn. We went ahead and cited him. He was storing property there. We took the property and put it into evidence, and his complaint to us was, how can I look for a job if I don't have any clothes to put on and go out and find a job? Well, excuse me, he is out there every day.
Yeah.
He's not looking for a job.
How can you look for a job when you're asleep in the day?
And I definitely don't want to infringe on anyone's rights. Everyone has a right, and this is where it gets kind of cagey.
But don't you think everybody gets that now, Mike?
Your
department, EPD, CHP, all the law enforcement guys really have been bending over backwards and have been more concerned, I think, about the civility and their rights than probably 95% of the rest of the community would be in a similar situation. And I realize it's part of your job, part of your training, all that kind of stuff. I don't think anybody has that question other than those who are trying to get into the pockets of the county. But I think the frustration is continuing to mount and boil over because there doesn't seem to be any resolution to this thing. And it's there. It's kind of festering even more.
And that's what when they had the public hearing for the urgency ordinance, that's what I spoke to, was the fact that we're a republic and we look out for the rights of the individual. Well, there's a whole class of individuals in our community. Their rights are being trampled on. And those are the people, many of them listening to this show right now, whose rights are being trampled on because they don't have the freedom to use the courthouse as they did in the past. They are intimidated. They are using the other side of the courthouse to come in and out. So their rights are being trampled on, too.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:30. We'll be back with more from Mike Downey.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. We think of the Coast Guard as being gallant lifesavers, and they are. However, there's another side of the Coast Guard, faceless bureaucrats far away. 3 years ago, one wrote to the Humboldt County Fair Association to say they wanted back the Mendocino Lighthouse lens that's been atop the county fair's main entrance for 63 years. The fair offered to build a new building for the lens. A citizen group, Save Our Lens, began to raise money. Then the Ferndale Museum offered to give the lens a new home. Most letters to the Coast Guard have gone unanswered. 2 weeks ago, though, in an undated letter, the Coast Guard warned Ferndale it would soon send a lampist to begin removing the lens. They didn't say when he'd arrive or give his name, but we think it's Grinch. In Rome 2,000 years ago, the famous orator Cicero spoke of the arrogance of officialdom. If he were here today, he'd put those Coast Guard bureaucrats in that category. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:36. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Humboldt County Sheriff Mike Downey. Mike, a number of the communities or the counties in our listening area are dealing with some really challenging situations. John Bishop in Curry County is contemplating turning almost everybody out of the jail.
Mm-hmm.
Not that the jail is overcrowded like we have here. The staff doesn't exist. You know, Oregon's
right.
got their challenges. I know Delaware County's got theirs. You've got yours. I've not heard you say anything about turning everybody out. But with the state dumping all the really nasty guys back that they can,
right?
And you know, pushing down through the system, it would be an interesting time to be in management for a law enforcement entity.
Well, what's going on now? We are feeling the repercussions and the from AB 109, which is the prison realignment. We are having people being held in our jail longer than it's designed to be. Designed to be held for. We have developed a matrix system that the courts have signed off on, which allows us to, when we get to a certain number, to pull the trigger more or less and release some people based upon the type of offense they're in there for.
And you still have the ankle or the wrist things?
Probation is working on a program for ankle bracelets. Right now, we do have one person out of our facility in conjunction with another entity that is being monitored in that way.
Wasn't that the big thing that Anna Sparks was talking about when she was? I guess that would be what, jail overcrowding two. Instead
right.
of five, you know, the home detention, the bracelet
right.
thing,
right.
and it seemed like it made
it's a better, it's a much better system now than it was then. You know, with operability and cell towers and that type of thing, they're all monitored.
So are we embracing that?
Yes, we are. You know, I mean, but again, probation's taking the lead on that because they'll get those pre-sentenced or those sentenced people before they actually come to my jail. And then they'll be out on the home monitors, which can be a very successful program.
I would think like a DUI or some of those that aren't a physical. You know, obviously you're not going to do that with spousal abuse or rape or something like that. But with some of those other things that you deal with on a somewhat regular basis, I would think you could probably work a significant percentage of the population in the jail. Get them out, make them pay for the thing,
right.
so you're not having, you know,
right.
you're not out that money, and maybe have a system that would work.
You have to keep those costs to where they can actually pay for it, though, because if they can't, in fact, we had that issue with our SWAT program, which we're trying to streamline now. Some people will say, I can't afford to be out on SWAT, so I'll set out my time in jail.
How much does it cost?
I don't have the hard figures for you now.
Oh,
probably. I think $60-$70 a day to be out on SWAT. We have, you know, there's vehicle costs.
So you have to do, mostly guys there 3-4 days kind of thing? Or?
Yeah, some of them have more. It's like 1 day a week. Most of them work 1 day a week. But we're trying to streamline that program and actually taking some of that AB 109 money, that realignment money, to offset the costs of those going into SWAT because it really defeats the program if we're not able to utilize it.
So you got... $500 is that? Would that be a fair average?
Well, for the totality of the program, probably
per body.
Yeah, it depends on the length of the sentence.
So why not stretch it out? And, you know, have them pay $10 a month for 3 or 4 years. Okay, throw in a finance or a processing fee so that your person's time is covered or those stamps are covered. All right, if it takes you 3 or 4 years, it takes you 3 or 4 years. But, we'll work it out.
But then our costs continue to to escalate to monitor those programs and to keep them going. There's always a cost involved.
Well, okay, then you bump it if you need to. But I would think that there, versus turning some of these bad apples out into the community,
right?
That doesn't make too much sense either.
No, it doesn't. But like I say, the SWAP program is a good program, and as long as we can keep that going and bring in the monitoring, leg monitors, ankle bracelets, that type of thing, it's going to help us offset that. Now, we're not in the same boat as some of the places you've mentioned in Oregon. May not be too far off from that, though. You know, it's tenuous.
30% budget, boom, gone.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really
I mean the thing that hit us between the eyes just recently was 3 months ago we were under the impression we're going to have a $9 billion deficit in the state of California, which is drastically better than what it was. But now we're being told it's more like $16 billion. There, somewhere in there, there has to be the piper has to be paid somewhere in there. So we're still unsure how that's going to, you know, shake out all the way down.
Well, and is there any belief that 16 is true? Is it 12? Is it 3? I mean, how do you miss by 50% of the whole?
Well, that's revenues weren't where they were supposed to be. You know, they didn't come in as robust as they were supposed to.
I think Phil did a comment, Arnott, and he said that a lot of that deficit is projected increases in expense and purchases.
Probably.
Well, what in the world's going on? I mean, that's as goofy as some of the stuff we were talking about earlier in the show.
Well,
I guess it's a venting kind of a show today.
Yeah, and it's like I was listening to national news today, and they were saying that there's, $50 billion in monies out there that were earmarked for programs that has not been spent. It's sitting there. Congress had passed these bills, these project bills, to the money to be expended. It has not been expended, and they say Congress really doesn't know what's going on. They're not keeping track. I think you'll find that at the state level, too. They really don't know. Somebody's not watching. That's how we got here.
Yeah, you got to step back and see big.
Yeah.
What about the old farm?
The farm?
Is that an option at all for some of these folks? Let them show up on the weekends and you work, you know, you get sentenced to 80 hours community service. Well, whether it's a SWAP program or hang out in jail or work on the farm.
Well, we still have a farm. We have our wood project, which is somewhat associated with SWAP.
Is that the same, or is that different?
Well,
did it replace it?
It's part of that, but we still do have the farm. The farm is small in scope. We raise pigs. We raise some cattle. We do raise some vegetables there. A lot of the hogs that are born are then sold to 4-H and future farmer students that raise them up. So there is an outlet there also, but you know there's only so many people that we can handle or put into these programs that fit, for one thing, into these programs. Some of these occupations can be dangerous too, so you have to make sure that they're a good fit for the program.
Yeah, you probably don't want to be giving the knife to the guy that's in there for using a knife improperly. KINS, News and Information, 343. We'll be back with more from Mike Downey.
The flame of learning is lit daily at St. Bernard's.
Hi, this is Craig Brown, Dean of Students and Campus Ministry at St. Bernard's Catholic School. We're praying in these days how we can create an even more definite presence of Christ in the world around us. We pray we all have an opportunity to stop the rush of this time of year to give profound thanks for the many blessings our Lord has showered on us.
St. Bernard's High School and Elementary School, making a difference in lives for today and tomorrow.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 347. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Mike Downey. Mike, this challenge with the jail operating side, and we don't hear an awful lot. I mean, most people, when you hear sheriff, it's the guys in the car, the gals who are out right on the street. You don't think about the jail. That's one of those other elements, behind-the-counter kinds of things.
Right.
And yet it's a significant part of what law enforcement is in our area, whether it's keeping people off the streets or getting them off the street. I mean, you can take your pick. It doesn't matter. It's the same end result on this thing. Is the jail full?
Today it's not. You know, you bring up the jail, and people need to realize the correctional facility, the jail, is one of the expressly mandated functions of the sheriff to maintain a jail. So that is a business I can't get out of. Is it full? Right now we're running probably... 75% to 80% of capacity, sometimes a little bit more. There, right after the first of the year, we were running 110 to 115% of capacity. So right now we're holding our own, but a lot of that has to do with our classification, the way we classify people, we get them in and out. It has a lot to do with how we're working with parole and probation as far as keeping our numbers down. So it's a constant battle to maintain those numbers. Because you got to remember, as our population increases, our costs for the population increases too. More food, more bedding, more clothing, more medical. Medical is probably one of the biggest expenses we have in the facility.
Medical because I come in and I need my drugs?
Right.
Or medical because when I'm in, I suddenly need drugs?
A lot of times what happens is they come in and we have to adjust their drugs. They can be on some of these psychotropic drugs that are well beyond what we can maintain and manage in the facility. So then we have to get them on something that's more manageable and something that's probably not as addictive or harsh as what we try to keep them on in the facility, because we have to be able to manage them inside the facility also. But I would say the numbers I've heard is we probably have 70-80% of the inmates are on site in some type of medication of some sort.
Have you thought of opening a prescription house inside, a little pharmacy lab?
No, but we're always looking for ways to lessen those costs by innovating.
Do you have to provide the prescription at the county's cost for their drugs?
Oh, yes.
Oh, so if I've got, let's say, my blood pressure,
okay, uh-huh,
but then I come in and I spend 3 months at the Hilton, you have to pick up my
right.
blood pressure medicine?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a
you're in my custody, and then I have to pick up those costs.
I'll call the pharmacy, have them deliver. Thanks for coming by, Mike.
You bet.
We've been talking shop this afternoon with Mike Downey. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you at 6:00.